Why is the Tete Reckon of a donkey? What's special about
The best place to look for that is in the Sefer Chinuch. Maybe if we have time later, we know. So let's learn here on Brachos Daf Yud Amud Aleph. We're looking at the widest lines on the page, the second of the wide lines. We started this last time. We want to move on. Omer Rab Yochanan Mishum Rab Shimbar Yochai. May dechsiv. What's the meaning of the pasuk in Mishlei? Pia Pascha v'Chachma v'Soras Chesed Al Lashona. Kineged mi Omer Shlomo Mikra Zeh. Now, in this statement, in the name of Rav Shimbar Yochai, there's an implicit question that there's something about this pasuk that needs elucidation. The entire chapter, this is Lamed Aleph in Mishlei, is dedicated, according to the Midrashim, it's a metaphor for the Torah itself. However, this pasuk is a little bit different because it says, and the Rashi goes into this. It says, Torah's Chesed al-Lashona. And there's a Lashona and there's the Torah. It sounds like there are two different personalities here, so to speak. Two different subjects. If the entire perek of Mishlei is a melitza, is a reference to Torah, what's Torah's Chesed al-Lashona? Lashona, Lachora would refer to Torah. And Torah's Chesed is also Torah. That's also part of the Torah. So there must be some answer to this riddle. And that's what the Gemara asks, Kineged mi Omar Shlomo Mikra Zeh? And the Gemara answers, Lo Amaro Ela Kineged David Aviv. Now, it's very interesting because Piha and Lashona are both words in Lashon Nekeva. And yet, according to this Chazal, they refer to David HaMelech. Why is the Torah, why is the Tanakh using Lashon Nekeva? So let's hold off on that question for just one more minute, and we'll come right back to it.
And also, why should just one pasuk, if the whole thing is supposed to relate to Torah, why should this one pasuk relate to somebody else?
Right. That question, I don't know if we'll get to, but the first question as to what Piha and Lashona in Lashon Nekeva have to do with David, that's a question that I saw that was addressed in the Mefarshim. Your question as to why one particular pasuk in this chapter is a reference to David, I can only tell you that I did not see anyone addressing that question per se. Now, what is it about David that's unique and somehow opens his mouth with Chachma and Torah's Chesed? Shedar b'chamisha olamim v'amar shira. Literally, it translates as he lived in five worlds. I would say it a little differently. I would say five different periods of his life. And I think these five periods are going to be presented by Rav Shimbar Yochai in a chronological order. And David, in each one of these periods of his life, each one of these crossroads, in a sense, a transformation of his personality, in each case he recited Shira. So when the Pasuk says Torah's Chesed al Lashona, and Lashona is a reference to David HaMelech, the Torah's Chesed means he revealed and praised Hashem for the Chesed that Hashem bestowed upon man.
Man in general.
Or at least upon himself, but his experience, I think, is common to all of mankind. So he may be praising Hashem for what he experienced and these five crossroads of his life, David HaMelech, but at the same time, it really represents a universal praise of man for God, because every single one of these experiences of David HaMelech can be universalized. So now, just to answer our original question as to why the Tanakh, why the Pasuk in Mishlei uses the feminine to refer to David HaMelech. So let's answer that question by asking a second question. And the second question is, where does the number 5 come from? Meaning, you know, I could argue that there are more than 5 periods of time in a person's life that are critical, that represent the crossroads, if you will, a transformation of sorts. For example, I would have added Bar Mitzvah to the list. That's certainly a transformation. But that's not on the list. What else?
When you get married.
Maybe marriage, maybe 80th birthday.
Yeah, but this is in David's mind. This is in his view.
Right, but how did
his experience?
What I'm asking is, how did Rav Shimon Yochai know that David was praising Hashem at 5 points of his life, in 5 olamos? Maybe there were 10, maybe there were 3, I don't know.
Because he looks at Baruch Hinashi and he finds these 5 different shukim.
That the Barchi Nafshis Hashem appears 5 times. So therefore, it's not, and please don't take me literally on this, but it's not David who's singing the praise of Hashem, but rather it's David's Nefesh that's singing the praise of Hashem. He could have said Barchi Es Hashem. He says Barchi Nafshis Hashem. And that explains, I think, not only the number 5, because on 5 different occasions in Tanakh, according to Rav Shimon Bar Yochai's research, David HaMelech cries out or declares with great, with exclamation and excitement, Baruch Nafshis Hashem. But not only that, it's the Nafshis Hashem. It's the Nefesh of David. Like if I were to author a book on this particular Gadot that we're studying today, the title of the book would be Nefesh al David. Or the Brachos of the Nefesh al David. And the word nefesh is in feminine. So that's, I think, an answer to the question, piha. Piha means the mouth of David's nefesh. Or Torah Chesed al Lishona means the tongue of David's nefesh, this power of speech of David's nefesh. That's what I think is going on here in this Agadita. And I think when we speak about the nefesh singing praises, it's almost an abstract part of man. It's the essence of man. It's also the pneumius of man on a deeper level. It's what you call the existential dimension of man and his identity. But not only that, it's not limited to a physical being. You know, when you talk about a person is both a nefesh and a guf. But here, in this Agadita, for example, in the first level of Baruch Nafshi, we're going to speak about David living in his mother's womb. It's very hard to speak about David as a physical entity. But if we speak about David's nefesh singing praises to Hashem, the nefesh is sort of the abstract soul of man that's not limited to the, you know, or it's not finite and limited by the physical limitations of man. That's why I think the emphasis here is on the nefesh. What we're really going down to is David's very essence. His being. You know, you're not talking about David walking down the street, you know, with how tall he was, I don't know, you know, his so-and-so height and so-and-so color of eyes and so. We're talking about his nefesh. His nefesh sings the praises of Hashem. And how many times does it say, Baruch Nafshis Hashem? 5 times. And those are the 5 transitional moments in the life of the nefesh of David, and for that matter, the nefesh of any creature. So, for example, the first stage in David's life is Dar B'mei Imo. Right, he lives as a fetus in his mother's womb, V'yomer Shira, and he appreciates how great God is that he forms man in this embryonic state. And where do we see that David's nefesh cries out and exclaims God's praises with regard to Mei Imo? Shenemar, Barchi nafshi es Hashem v'chol kravai Hashem kodsho. Somehow the Gemara understood that the word kravai, which means the innards, is a reference to a body inside a body. And a body inside a body is none other than the embryo in its mother's uterus. And David recognizes the greatness of the development of the embryo. And that's called kravai. His nefesh sings the praises of Hashem. Now, I'm not 100% sure exactly whether we should take this literally. Meaning, and I think I've raised this question in the past, does it mean that David, while he was in his mother's womb, was already singing praises? The Marsha takes that very seriously, literally. And the Marsha is so bothered by this because the Gemara says in Nida that a fetus in its mother's uterus is piv sasum, the Gemara says, has no open mouth. So therefore the Marsha is bothered, how could David sing Shira if his mouth is closed? And he answers because the Gemara says Taburo Pasuach, that, you know, there's an umbilical cord which connects the fetus with its mother, with his mother, so that the food and sustenance could go from there. That was open, and somehow David Shira went through that part. Again, this is the Marsha because the Marsha understands this very literally. I would have thought to say that the actual Shira was sung by David much later on in his life, but it was about that first stage. Like, for example, Chazal say that Afilu Ubar B'mei Imo Amru Shira Layam. But I looked in the Mefarshim, and the Mefarshim say it's not that the Ubar, the fetus, was reciting Shira, Az Yashiv Moshe, but that later on when they were born and they were mature enough and they realized what a great miracle it was and they were saved in utero, they sung praises about the Shira Sayam, about that extra miracle. So I don't know if anybody's going to say that here. I didn't find any basis for that in the Mefarshim, but it's at least a logical possibility. Now we get to stage number two. Yonak mishte imo v'nistakel bidadeha v'omar shira. Where do we see this? Shenemar again, baruch inafshias Hashem, v'al tishkechi kol gmulav. Now the word gmulav here is a reference to a nursing baby that reaches the mature state of being weaned and now could eat on its own, no longer dependent upon its mother. Back in the old times, that could be 4 years after birth. Today, the baby usually nurses for up to a year, or maybe a couple of months after on very rare occasions. But in the Gemara's time, it would seem that it would go for 2 years, 3 years, and maybe even 4 years. But when David says, Al Tishkechi, in a sense, he's talking to his own nefesh. And he's giving chizuk, he's being ma'orah his nefesh to say, don't forget the gmul of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And maybe the kol gmul of here is all the different elements that go into nursing. Whether it be the biological greatness and significance of nursing, or even perhaps, as we're going to see now, that God organized it in a way that's more appropriate spiritually for the makeup of a person. So the Gemara asks, my kol gmulav? Why did David HaMelech emphasize the word kol, going beyond just simply the significance of nursing? Om Rabbi Avo, and here the Gemara quotes two answers to this question. The first answer is Rabbi Avo. Sha'asa ladadim b'makom bina. Oh, I'm sorry. Now the Gemara is going to give two explanations to Rabbi Avo. So Rabbi Avo says that the kol gmulav that David is so amazed about, the God's greatness and his compassion, is that it was placed, the baby milks from its mother close to its mother's heart, and that's where the dadim were placed. And what is the heart? The heart, on a more metaphoric level, is the house of Bina. It's the place where a person feels this inner inner wisdom, which is called Bina. And where were the Dadim placed? B'makom Bina, and not like in the case of other animals, B'makom Erva or B'makom Tinofes. Taima Mai. So what was so great about the way God organized the nursing process for man as opposed to the animals? And the Gemara gives two answers to why David is so overwhelmed with praise. According to Rabbi Yehuda, Kedesh lo yistakel b'makom erva, and according to Rav Matana, it's Kedesh lo yinak mimakom hatinofes. So what we want to analyze is what's the difference between these two. And you'll notice a number of diukim in the language. You know, first, you won't find the word lo yistakel with regard to makom hatinofes. You only find it with regard to makom erva. On the other hand, Rav Masna in the second answer says kedosh lo yinak. He emphasizes the yinika, the nursing process. Whereas the first opinion of Rabbi Yehuda leaves out the words kedesh lo yinak. It just says kedesh lo yistakel. But in a general sense, why does the Gemara why is it so significant that there are two different opinions here about the praise of David as far as the location of the Dadim is concerned? I mean, they seem very similar, but what's the difference between the two? Then we get to number four.
Are you going to give answers to this question?
Yeah, Mirtzachem, that's what...
I'm
just giving you the background to Rav Kook. And number four is Rabbim Apaltan Shel Rishoyim V'om Ashira. Now, if you take a look at this pasuk, it doesn't start with Barchi Nafshi, which seems to be an exception to the rule, but it does complete itself. It says, "Itamu chatoim in aretz rishoyim odeinam Barchi Nafshi es Hashem aluka." This is the chapter I think we read on Rosh Chodesh. Those who have that minute, right? And it completes with Barchi Nafshi es Hashem. And here, David HaMelech seems to be talking about the Chatoyim and the Rishoyim. We've seen this pasuk earlier. If you recall the dialogue between Bruria and her husband Rabbi Meir, but here he seems to be extremely excited about the downfall of the Rishoyim. Obviously, this is a much later stage in his life. Now, I think I skipped one paragraph, and I apologize for that. So the first stage in his life was the fetus in utero. And then the third stage in his life was the yinika. Fourth stage in his life was Mapalos and Shorisham. I skipped the second one. The second one is Yotza Liavir Olam V'Nistakel B'Kochavim U'Mazolos V'Omar Shira. Now, on one level, it sounds like he is he's a spectator and an observer looking at the beautiful astronomy in the heavens, the stars and the galaxies. But the Mashah, for some reason, triggers off a whole literature here. It takes us on a whole different road, a whole different path.
It's also interesting that this one does not say Barchi Nafshi. Is there anyone
who doesn't say Barchi Nafshi? Well, the Gemara has the word Vigomer at the end. Do you see that word Vigomer? Let's read it inside. Baruch Hashem Malach of Gibore Koach, Osei Dvaro, Lishma Bekol Dvaro, Baruch Hashem Kol Tzva Vigomer. And what's the Vigomer? Misharsav Osei Ritzono, Baruch Hashem Kol Masav Bechol Mekomos Memshalto, Barchi Nafshi es Hashem. So the Barchi Nafshi es Hashem for some reason wasn't printed in the text of the Gemara, but it was hinted at this Vigomer. So as I mentioned before, the Marashah takes us down a whole other path. He decides, and we could try to figure out why he doesn't want to take this Gemara on a simple, straightforward level, that The Kochavim u'Mazalos here is a reference to the astrological control of the stars over man and his mazal, which means that man, the Gemara says at the end of Masechta Shabbos, is born, each and every one of us is born under a certain mazal, which refers to the constellations, and that engenders in man a certain kind of personality trait. But the Maharsha is quick to point out that the Baruch Hinafshis Hashem here means that we are not left to the sovereign rulership of the Mazalos, but Baruch Hinafshis Hashem, because Hashem is above the Mazalos. Which means that even though we're born with a certain natural propensity, but nevertheless God is above, and ultimately God could change and alter our midos, our personality traits. And he goes on to point out that David, in particular, was praising God on a personal level, because the Gemara tells us that he was born under a mazel called Ma'adim. And Ma'adim has a teva of Shofech Damim. And the Maharsha says, Va'akadosh Baruch Hu Hafach V'shina Es Mazolo. So in any event, this is a whole philosophical discussion about astrology and God being above the astrology. And that takes us down a whole different path. The simple pshat in the Gemara, before the Maharsha, but I see all the Mepharshim went, you know, they went in the footsteps of the Maharsha, would be to say that he was amazed at the stars and the galaxies. Now, we don't always understand why each star has its, you know, the gases that it emits and so for the heat and how it impacts on the Earth. We may have insights into our galaxy, but we don't know too much about other galaxies. You know, the furthest man got in outer space was the moon. But we do have, you know, super radar systems and telescopes and so forth that could see almost towards the end of our galaxy. We don't know why it was necessary to create all these galaxies and how they interact in some sort of super universal ecological system that has an impact on the Earth.
It's interesting, it says that Hashem changed his muscle, but in fact, the reason David HaMelech didn't build the base of Middosh is because he did have blood on his hands, so he was a warrior.
But God changed his mazel so that he could become the Ne'im Zmiros Yisrael. He could write liturgy and he could sing the praise of Hashem. In other words, that callous kind of bloodthirsty nature, which unfortunately too many people have, that was changed by HaKadosh Baruch. But the point is that we shouldn't think, even though there is something called mazel, according to this approach, that we are stuck forever, irreversibly in our mazel, like incarcerated in a jail, and the key to the lock is thrown into the river.
Isn't that what they say, that the Jews can change?
Correct.
But the other nations can't.
And the Ramban many times in Chumash says that the wonderful stature and status of Eretz Yisrael is that in Eretz Yisrael God controls what goes on directly, without the intervention of the constellation. So, whereas the constellations have an impact outside of Eretz Yisrael, and we have to pray to Hashem to rise above those forms that lock us into a certain personality, Hashem will save us, He'll protect us, He can change them ourselves. In Eretz Yisrael, the people of Israel are controlled directly by Hashem, without the mazalos. That's one of the famous theses of the Ramban in his Pirush al Torah. So again, let's go. So we have four out of five. Then number one is Bemei Imo. Number two is Kochav Mazalos. Number three is Yanika. Number four is the Mapola of the Rishoyim. And finally, number five, Nistakel Bioma Misa Vioma Shira. Shenema Barchinafshias Hashem, Hashem Elokai, Gadalta Mi'od, Hod Vahada Lavashta. That's in the same capital that we started with earlier. My Mashma, so the Gemara says, there's nothing here in this Pasuk which indicates that David is singing praises about the day of death. My mashma di al yoma misa nemar, omer Rav Barashilo, mi seifa dinyona tichsiv. And once again, the Gemara only quotes part of the pasuk, but it says v'gomer, tastir panecha yibahelun, tosef rucham yigvaun, v'al afaran yashuvun. So this is all clearly an indication of el afar of yashuvum on the yom hamisa, and David once again is barchi nafshias Hashem, his nefesh is singing a song of praise.
I mean that's a bit forced because you know that possibly is 20 odd psukim later than barchi nafshias. Oh. You know, you can connect anything to anything.
Right. So what happens in the middle between Pasuk Aleph, Baruch Nafshis Hashem, and Pasuk Chof Tes? So the Mefarshim say the following, that Hapsukim Shebeintayim, I'm just reading you, Oskim Betiur Niflos Habriya, they all describe the mysteries and the wonderment of the creation. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mareh L'Tzadikim, this is based on Yerushalmi, Kodem Misosam, Es Chelkom HaMesukalem L'Olam Abba, V'Ikar Chelkom Hu Hasagas HaBoreh. So this is a three-part thesis here, the three principles here, the premises that this presentation is based on. Premise number one is that the greatest Hasaga, the greatest, shall we say, perception of God that man is capable of. I mean, man is obviously physical, mortal, he's limited, he's finite. What can he hope for to perceive of divinity? The greatest, the highest level he can hope for in perception of divinity is to see and appreciate nature, right? The Niflaos Habriya. That's premise number one. Premise number two is that God gives a tzaddik a sample, so to speak, a capsulized form of what he's going to experience, the reward that he will achieve in the next world. And when does God give that little sampling? Right before his death. That's the premise number two. Premise number three, therefore, is that David, in this kapitel, is going to dedicate 28 out of 29 psukim to the Niflaos HaBoreh, which were revealed to him before Pasuk Chof Tes, which is Yom HaMisa. And this entire kapitel, from beginning to end, is right before David HaMelech dies, and David HaMelech is being given by God, like any tzaddik is given by God before his death, a little taste of what the next world is going to be like. Because the reward of the next world is all about Hasagas HaBoreh. It's all about somehow communing with God and identifying with divinity and knowing God in a most profound way. I mean, the Rambam uses a slightly different terminology. He speaks about tzaddikim in the world to come, in the Olam HaNeshamos, sitting with Ataros al Rasheim, the Nenemis of Ashkina. Again, we don't know what this is all about. Nobody's been there and back to describe that experience.
So, can I say, this Balkin Ashish Hashem, these psukim, I thought they're a description of this world. You're saying it's a description of the world to come?
It's a description of the Niflaos HaBoreh that are revealed to David HaMelech before his death, yeah, as a sampling of what David HaMelech will experience in the ultimate world of reward.
So this is not a description of this world. It's
a description of that moment of death, which is the transition between this world and the next. And what is that transition? That transition is from finitude, because man is finite, to infinity, because man after death in the Olam HaNeshamos experiences infinity. And the transition is all about Hasagas HaBoreh, all about comprehending and communing with the infinite God. But in that sense, we can integrate the entire chapter into one whole unit. Even though you and I think that the chapter is all about you know, the insights of David HaMelech into the Bria and describing its amazing complexity, and that's true. But it also it has to do at the same time with Yom HaMisa, which, as David HaMelech indicates at the end of this in the 29th pasuk of El Afarim Yeshuvun, which is Yom HaMisa, because God, Dafka, with regard to Tzaddikim Yerushalmi, says, reveals and gives them a sampling of what they're going to experience in the next world right before they die in this world. In other words, in a sense, the transition between one world and the other, which David is praising, his nefesh is praising, is death itself. Meaning, even before death, you're already sort of dead. I don't know if I explain myself well. But what I mean to say is that it's not that you're dead and then you experience the reward of the next world, but that even before you die, God shares with you, because you're a tzaddik, a little bit of that experience. Now, why is it necessary for man, when he's still connected to his guf and he's a finite being, to get that perception? I'm not sure. That it seems that there's got to be some schar even in this world.
I mean, I can understand that. I can understand that God, in the moments before he died, he got a vision of what the world to come might be like. But what I don't understand is that the psalm seems to be quite clearly describing this world and not the world to come. That's
again, because that experience that David HaMelech is having is not post-death, but within that radius of death itself. Meaning, before death, already he's experienced this in this world, this incredible reward, and this, you know, perception of things that are infinite. And that's what David is describing, but it's all about the day of death. But what I'd like to do now is to study the Ein Hayah, and we'll begin with number Kuf Chaf Zayin, because, I'm sorry, Kuf Chaf Ches, because Kuf Chaf Zayin we've already done. Let's just give a quick summary of Kuf Chaf Zayin, in which David HaMelech is described as one of those very unique, rare, exceptional individuals who can integrate two mutually exclusive elements or dimensions of the human soul, namely Seichel and Regesh, intellect and emotion. Those two are mutually exclusive. If my intellect is involved, my emotions are not. I'm involved in an investigation, on a pure intellectual sense, there's no room for Regesh. And once I let the Regesh, you know, control me, then the Seichel doesn't control me. David is a very unique species, that's what Shlomo HaMelech is pointing out. Very rare indeed, because he has this profound intellect which engenders a regesh that is perfect. He calls it Shleimut HaRegesh HaHod, Sheyesh B'Maisa L'Kim, to appreciate all of God's creation, its majesty. That's David HaMelech. And it's all a result of David's intellectual comprehension on a very deep level, as almost, I guess you'd say, a profound scientist of the universe and its complexity. And at the end of this presentation, Rav Kook points out that the Shira of David, which is a reflection, expression of regesh, of emotion, is not shitchi. It's not on a superficial level. But rather it's a result of a tremendous amount of work, of toil that David put in his lifetime, using his chachma. That's the pasuk, pia pascha v'chachma. David HaMelech begins, and it's a long, tedious process, to endeavor to understand and appreciate the universe that God has created and all its wonderful complexities and amazing facets. Only then, after David achieves that Pia Paschal V'Chachma, that intellectual comprehension, then it's Toras Chesed al-Lashono, or Lashono, which is the Nefesh of David, as we said before, to express in song an appreciation for God's creation. And in five different stages of his life, David HaMelech appreciates with song God's creation. Those transitions in his life represent new facets of appreciation, but they all come as a result of Yediyah V'Hakara, meaning of Seichel, of the intellectual endeavor. David HaMelech's genius as a scientist, if you will, is not to be understated in this context. I mean, we're going to put all our eggs into the Shira, but that's not so. We have to understand and appreciate that it's the Pia Paska V'Chachma that's unique in the case of David that really starts and triggers off this entire process that culminates with this Shlemus of Regesh, with the Shira of David HaMelech at five different stages of his life. And if we reread just for one moment the last few lines in Kuf Chav Zayin, he writes, Ad shehisnase l'teudas nishmas ha'odem el yona. David HaMelech is uplifted to the status of Nishmas Adam HaElyona. That's the highest ranking status of a Neshama. And that's going to happen through this five-stage process in which David HaMelech connects Pia Pascha V'Chachma with Torah's Chesed. And that level of the Neshama HaElyona that David achieves continues from his life, even posthumously beyond his death. But we have to understand that Regesh Kazeh, this depth of emotion that allows David to sing the praises of Hashem, Eino Bami Makar V'Regesh Tivi Pashut. This is not sort of natural emotions on the very superficial level. Ki Im Achrei Amal, Amal means a great deal of work, V'Yediya Amuka, an intellectually profound knowledge, the huchibur shel Torah's chesed should be menetotzos regesh v'chshira im mekar ha-chokhma. It's a result of a chibur, of a connection between the source of chokhma, which is ladas, lahavin, etc., to understand the entire structure and the complexity of the universe, and then what's built on top of this chokhma is Torah's chesed, the appreciation of the chesed of Hashem, and that appreciation is a result of regesh, of emotions, and allows David to formulate shira. But what is the regesh? What's the origin of the regesh? And the answer is the origin of the regesh is chachma. So that is the integration on the ultimate level of chachma with regesh.
You would think that the way you've described David HaMelech, that really he's on such a hugely high level, and yet Kodesh Baruch Hu didn't allow him to build the Beis Mikdash. You would think that somebody like that for sure should have been. I know the stories he had blood on his hands, but if he'd got to this level, you would think that he would be allowed to build the Beis Mikdash.
Right. The truth is that although David did not bring the Beis HaMikdash, build the Beis HaMikdash, Tosus says in Masechet Zvachim that he was Mekadesh the Makom HaMikdash. It was only Shlomo who actually built the walls of the Beis HaMikdash. But the Kiddush HaMakom was achieved by David HaMelech. David went to the Arnona Yavusi and he purchased the land. And from the moment that he designated that land for the building of the Beis HaMikdash, it was called already the Beis HaBechira. Because if you remember, the Psukim in Parshas Re'eh describe HaMakom Asher Yivchar Hashem, they don't tell you where that location is. There's a chosen place.
You know already it's from the Kedah.
Correct, but we never knew exactly where that is. You know, there are a couple of different possibilities. It was David HaMelech who, with the help of Nasan HaNavi, was able to actually pinpoint the place. Well, maybe it was God, I know, Nosson was later in his life, whatever it is, but David HaMelech was the one who actually, so it's true that the Kedushas Mechitzos, meaning the physical walls that surrounded the Makom and in a sense engendered a Kedusha such that you could never bring a carbon anywhere else outside those walls, That was structured by Shlomo HaMelech, and for some reason in the divine scheme David was prevented from doing so. But David did lay the foundation, so to speak. I don't mean foundations in the physical sense. Although it could be that David HaMelech already put down the Ritzpah, actually. The Ritzpah of the Azara was put down by David. Because Tosis, again, I don't want to get off on a tangent, but Tosis says, the Gemara wonders if one of the stones of the Ritzpah Sazara was removed on a temporary basis, and the Kohen, when he did the Avodah, was standing on the dirt, on the ground, below the Ritzpah, because that particular place, the Ritzpah, was removed. So the Gemara vacillates back and forth. Is he considered standing in the Beis HaMikdash? You know, because there couldn't be a chatzitza between his feet and the Beis HaMikdash, such that his Avodah is Kshera. And the Gemara says it depends what David HaMelech's Kiddush was when he put down the Ritzpah. Was he Mekadosh only the Ritzpah Elyona, or Ad L'Tahom, until all the way to the core of the universe? But you see that David was the one who was Mekadosh the Mikdash, and the question when the Ritzpah goes all the way down, or only the surface level of the Ritzpah, that depends upon how David went about doing the Kiddush. So, you know, people mistakenly think that it was just Shlomo HaMelech, but really it was a... In modern Hebrew, we'd say a shituf pula, right? A joint effort between David and Shlomo. Next, Kuf Chav Ches. We're talking now about David going through all these stages. And again, what I like to do is try to present Rav Kook in to the best of my ability in the English language, which obviously loses a great deal of translation. But I do it for expediency of time. I mean, there will be certain lines that I have to read in the original, because I don't, you know, I don't have in front of me a written out translation. This is all just what do they call it? Spontaneous? What's the word?
On the hoof.
Or in America they say off the cuff. I don't know. Do they use that in England too?
Yeah. No, off the cuff means that you haven't even got the text yet. You're just doing
ad lib. Right. So we don't want to go that far. No. It's not ad lib. No. He says the following. There are two ways a person could look at reality. Two different perspectives. And he describes two different types of individuals. One category of people, he calls them Hashkafa Shitchis. They look at reality only on an external, superficial level. And he says that such a person could never actually appreciate the lofty and majestic grandeur of God and His brilliance, even though he could say many things about the universe. But in this particular presentation, the premise is he'll never reach the ultimate level of recognition of the lofty nature of God. Now, he adds another phrase here which caught my eye. V'im zeh hod nefesh ha'adam. He says that when we get to the ultimate appreciation of God, we also, imze, with that, we arrive and achieve an appreciation of the ultimate majesty of the soul of man. And I think here he's trying to explain the barchi nafshi, which is the five, you know, the repetition five times, that David HaMelech's appreciation for the universe and for the Rabbos Hashem is all interwoven with his appreciation for the Nefesh itself. It's the Barchi Nafshi that David HaMelech is nispoil from the Nefesh HaAdam, and the appreciation for the Nefesh HaAdam and the appreciation for the universe and God is like one and the same. It's almost like of two parts of one whole that correspond to each other and work in tandem. But a person who looks at the universe superficially, although he may appreciate the external revealed elements of Chachma, meaning obviously even a scientist, let's call him an atheist, but he definitely appreciates the chachma, you know, the wisdom that's built into the universe. He may not attribute that wisdom to a deity necessarily, but nevertheless, all that is called simanim gluyim of chachma. Those are the external manifestations of chachma. And here, he quotes the Chovas HaLevavos of Rabbeinu Bechai, who writes that there's no difference whatsoever between an intelligent person who's well educated and a boor, if you will, a ksil. They're equal in terms of the appreciation of chachma gluya. In other words, even if you're not a brilliant intellect or a scientist, you still have the same level of appreciation for the universe, because you're still looking at the external superficial simanim of chachma. But then he describes the second category, which he calls him a chacham amiti, a true, genuine, wise individual, because he's not limited to what we spoke about before, the simanei hachachma on the superficial level, but rather choder means he penetrates below the surface and reveals the simanei chachma, not gluyim, but tzfunim. Tzfunim means the hidden, concealed simanei chachma. So the eye, perceiving only externalities, will not be able to produce a sense of appreciation for the Romamus, not of Hashem, nor of the Nefesh. But since the genuine Chacham has more than just that external eye, his perspective goes way deeper, he reveals that which is concealed below the surface in terms of Simanei Chachma. He will recognize the string of divine goodness that connects together everything in the universe, every phenomenon that manifests itself in the universe from beginning until end. He therefore will appreciate the amazing mystery of the universe, the niflaos of Hashem, and therefore immediately he responds by singing God's praises. And now if you move on to page 51, he says that this chacham is now endowed with a very straight heart, meaning his perception of God and God's goodness is yashir. Yashir means, you know, you don't have to go through any drays, you know, any curves and you know, he just straightforward. And he acknowledges and appreciates the majesty of his own soul, which recognizes the majesty of the King of Kings. And therefore David, who represents, as we saw in the previous presentation, a chibur, an integration of das and shira, of the depth of knowledge together with the depth of emotion that expresses itself in song to God, he will recite shira on things that can only be appreciated by the chacham ha'amiti, who sees below the surface. The chacham v'ashkafa gama. So this recognition of the majesty and the mystery, the amazing mystery of the depth of the universe, can only come from a chacham amiti like David HaMelech, whose hashkafah's perception goes beyond and below the surface. And this is what the Ein Ayah is going to prove, not once, not twice, but five times over, that David HaMelech is really penetrating below the surface. That's the challenge he's setting for himself. So let's go through all the five and see if we're convinced. We're going to be the jury here. So we get to the first one, is Dar B'mei Imo. He says that if you look at it on a superficial level, what's the big deal? why are you getting so emotionally enthused about it? Because the situation of man as a human being, of Homo sapien, is identical to that of all other animals that don't even have the capacity to speak. And even the lowest of creatures, for example, the Shrutzim, who are very far from any sort of intelligence that we know of. You know, there are animals that are much higher in the intelligence scale, but the Shrutzim on the bottom of the of all the living creatures, and they also have a reproductive system. In fact, I think, if I'm not mistaken, the snake actually has an egg within its body for a very long period of time until it actually gives birth. I have to read that up. In any event, but now we're talking about a hisbonanus. We're looking and analyzing below the surface. This is again the Chacham Amiti in action. And what he realizes is that even when he is on this lowest stage of development, you know, he's at the first stage, the beginning, he's just an embryo, yet all the parts of his yitzur, of his creation, are being formed. And all the limbs of his body, and all the elements that make up the potential for man to have a psyche, that's what he calls kochos ha-nefesh, on the most advanced level, with an intellectual perception and sharpness, with a keenness, even on the sensitivity level, and nothing is missing. The groundwork has been laid down during this period in the embryonic stage. And now he uses a phrase here which I'd like to try to dissect. Marabba or Rabba Hatchuna Hanasa bebeten amleya biyitziras ha'adam. The question that I have here is, what does the word tchuna mean? I think that tchuna means the potential. Tchuna means those characteristics that allow, in this case, man and his nefesh to actualize and reach perfection. All this great potential is formed in man in the embryonic stage. And even though man is so early in his development, so far from perfection, nevertheless he absolutely must have, before he enters into this world, all the kochos, all the ability, whether they be spiritual and ethical in nature, whether they be physical in nature, all that he'll need for the rest of his life is already being created and formed during this embryonic period, such that at the end of this period of time, man emerges. And who is man? He calls him Adam HaMa'ala. Ma'ala means he's so much far superior to all other creatures on the face of the earth.
Yes,
again, but you know, many of man's faculties are in his physical being. You know, true, the neshama was injected into the body, but the body itself is man. Man is not the neshama. Man, you know, after death, he's, you know, man is the neshama. But during his lifetime, and until man achieves all the goals that he has to achieve, he is guf. He's physical, and all the physical and psychological propensities or faculties in man are all formed during this, let's call it a 9-month period of time. But I was amazed at the poetry here in describing man. You know, man at the end of this period of time who emerges, he calls him Adam HaMa'ala HaMechabek Zro'ot Olam U'marcheve Ein Kates Bideo ubisichlo. Well, let's try to translate that. It's going to lose so much in translation. Mechavik means he embraces the arms of the universe. It's unbelievable in his description of man when he emerges after this period of development, embryonic development. He encompasses the entire world. Merchavei ein keitz, the breath of the universe that's infinite, infinite breath, with his mind and with his intellectual faculties. And all this is man as a physical, intellectual being. All the faculties are formed during this period of time. Now, I have to be honest with you, when I read this Gemara, this was the furthest from my mind. Meaning, you know, if you would ask me what David was singing about, you know, you talk about the fetus and its development, right? There are three stages of development, and you can ask the obstetricians and the gynecologists, and they'll go into great detail. You know, if you study anatomy, you begin to see the form. But all that is on, as wonderful as it is on one level. What he's saying is that David HaMelech penetrated beyond that in his perception and his appreciation of man, that all the greatness of man as a being is clinched, is prepared during this period of time. And that's stage number one. And according to this, he advocates that you must have a chacham ha'amiti in order to appreciate that. Number two. Now he looks at the kochav mazolus after he's born. He says, once again, if all you have is the chachma hashitchis, you know, the superficial perception of reality, then the external world does not really have any sort of impact on man. What he means to say is the following. How do you describe the interaction between the universe at large and man? So that on a, you know, when man is born, right, man is born, he's a young child, you know, he's what is he able to do? He's able to open his eyes and look at the stars, look at the galaxies. He can even take out an astronomy book and begin to appreciate the external world, its greatness, its infinity. But that's only on an chitzoni, on a superficial level. Now he says, look at David HaMelech and his perception, his appreciation. David HaMelech, as a representative of the Chacham Amiti, looks below the surface with a depth of intellect, of das, and he understands and appreciates. Okay, now we have to read the text inside. Shalol Shav Niksharu Chushe Ha'adam Virig Shosav Im Kol Hasaviv Lo. He means to say that David perceives that there's a connection between all of man's sense perceptions, all of his emotions, and the universe around him. V'yesh l'das she'ena seichel ha'sholim she'b'chochma yosin niskar notzer bo me'ayin rak she'hu hitpatchut mima she'huchan lo mireish tzitzios kemen shal roim she'b'shtashlo mo'adu b'sichlo Paul of Om Chitzonin Erech Vishir Al Rikshosov Vidatim Kol Kochos Hanafshim Olenu Lakir Mizesh Takev Bihi Potach Enov Motza Atzma B'toch Olam Achitzonik Kfar Hischila Chacham Lirkom Es Hayachas Hanifla Azeh Afshlo Hukru Totzaos of Klal Adena Valachona Nifla Azos Nirkemes B'Seser B'Chesed Elyon U'Tachlis Eskom Vishir. David HaMelech is already at this stage experiencing a transition, and he is appreciating that all that's necessary, whatever ingredients go in to the ultimate goal of man's interaction and man's connection to the universe at large, all that is being laid down now. That God allows man to develop step by step through one preparation after the other, one level of the other, from the beginning of his birth, emerging into this world, until he reaches a shleimut, a certain perfection in which the interfacing or the relationship between the world at large, out to the external world, and man himself on every level, whether it's the level of intellect, whether it's the level of emotion, is a powerful and profound connection. And when does this development begin? When does man begin to become, which later down the line, after many stages of preparation, is going to perfect itself and emerge and in its wholesome totality, to bring man to the level in which he becomes a part of the world, the external world, interacting between the two, between himself and the world? He says, the divine wisdom has already begun the process of developing man, although who could appreciate that at this early stage of development? Al hachana nifla zot, regarding this amazing preparation of man, which again is a process that's going to take place stage by stage, David recites Shira. And all this is to appreciate the chesed of God, the supreme compassion and kindness of God, that's nirkemes b'seser, that's really being formed and developed in a concealed state below the surface. This is not something that a normal, shall we say, rank and file scientist or what he calls the chachma. The chachma, what was the phrase he used? The chachma chitzonis could appreciate this. It takes a tremendous insight of what we call the chachma miti to go below and penetrate below the surface and reveal how God, from the beginning of man's life, is preparing man stage by stage, step by step, to develop him to the point in which he can interact with the universe at large. Now, he doesn't go into details. Is he talking about how the universe impacts him in terms of Harchavas Hadas and his ability to understand the universe and appreciate God? Does he talk about man's interaction with the universe on a psychological level, on a social level, in terms of the politics and the society and the friends that he has? Man is a multifaceted being, and his relationship or interaction with the universe at large and how much it impacts on his soul in every way is something way, way beyond. It's so complex, it's beyond our comprehension. But be that as it may, the preparation for man begins the very moment he's born. He's already interacting with his universe around him. And he's maturing and developing until the point in which he is so well developed that that he achieves a profound interaction with the universe. Yeah. So we got up to Kuf Chav Tes. And here we'll take a pause. And I wish you a great deal of hatzlacha in the rest of the day and then tomorrow, and maybe you'll be around tomorrow. Good. Okay, great. Let's continue with Kuf Chav Tes, and we're up to stage number 3, the transition of Gmul and Gmar Yenika. He says again, Yenika, if you look at it through the perspective of the Chachma Hachitzonis, it's something that exists in every single developed mammal. Every animal has the ability to nurse its young. What did David HaMelech see and perceive below the surface on a deeper level as the Chacham HaMiti penetrating below the surface and revealing some secret? And the answer is that there is something unique about the nursing process, and it was designed that way by the divine being for one of two reasons. The part of the body that is responsible for nursing in the case of a human being is located in a makom bina, connected to a limb of the body which is the center of all regesh, And this reveals the greatness of man and how superior he is to the other animals. For one of two reasons, either shelo yistakel be'erva or shelo yinak b'mokom atinofes. And here Rav Kook claims that these two answers, these two explanations for the greatness of Yinikud man, correspond to the Seichel and to the Regesh respectively. And both are necessary to develop the Adam HaMala that we spoke about before, the man as the superior creature in the universe who embraces the entire universe, Olam Umlo, Ein Kates. And each one of these two opinions correspond to each of these two dimensions of man, the Seichel of and Regesh. First, we're going to focus on Shelo Yistakel Be'erva. And that reflects on the Seichel of man. Because the enemy of man's Seichel is the total dedication, heaven forbid, to a hedonistic pleasure life, pleasure-seeking lifestyle. That kind of gasus, that kind of coarse experience, machshichos hod haseichel, will darken the majesty of the intellect. And what's going to save man from that, if man is going to, from the very moment he's born, focus all of his attention on a makom erva, then he's in deep trouble, because that's only going to feed his need for taiva, and by being ma'or the taiva gasa, by awakening with him and strengthening with him that desire for taiva, he will not develop as an intellectual being who has the hod of seichel. And therefore, God placed the Dodim in a Makom Bina, which is an Aver that's full of Regesh, and spared man the necessity to be Mistakel B'Erva, as the animals have to, because the animals are dedicated to a pleasure-seeking kind of life. They don't have to develop their abstract intellectual thought process. And now we get to the second opinion, Shelo Yonak B'Mokom HaTinofes, and he describes Regesh as something that becomes sensitized, Yis'adein, as a result of its ongoing connection or exposure to beauty and to Noam and to those elements of life that represent the comfort of man, the beauty of man, the cleanliness of man. These are aesthetic qualities that are being described here. Vakiur, that aspect of reality which is kiur, which lowers man, or lichluch, where man soils himself, instead of seeing beauty, he's down in the mud, is ma'abdim esor haregish. That is antithetical to the development of a radiant and sensitive regesh, of ne'imus, of beauty and sensitivity. And therefore HaKadosh Baruch Hu, with his brilliant infinite wisdom, located Yanika far from a makom tinofes, from a place that's full of kira and lichluch. And that facilitates within man the ability to develop his regesh, the power of his feeling and emotions, and sensitize them. Biyoso chush gashmi. Now, here Rav Kook wants to explain why, in the second opinion, it doesn't mention histaklus, it mentions yinika. In the first, he could have also said kidei shelo yinek the istakel be'erva, the yinika is left out. He says, because yinika itself, the act of the process of nursing, is very physical, and that's connected to the regesh. The regesh is the sense of connecting to all of physical material reality. And then he writes, Yispoil Yosef mitchunas hacholov hamakabel ezo hashpa mimokam aviyosef beguf. So that element of regesh is going to be very much impacted by the location within the body of the yinika. And therefore the emphasis on shlo yinak b'mokam atinofes. When he gets to regesh, that's where when he gets to seichel, and the problem is erva, there the issue is histaklus. That in other animals, there's, you know, you expose the baby to histaklus b'erva. Not so in the case of man. And therefore, whereas the first opinion emphasizes histaklus, because that total focus and gazing on the erva is going to undermine man's intellect, because it's going to increase and feed his koch ataiva, his taiva gasa. In the case of tinofes, when we're dealing not with that which is antithetical to seichel, but that which is antithetical to regesh, there the emphasis is on yinak, that the yinika itself, the nursing, should not be related to a makom tinofes, which is antithetical to regesh and to aesthetic beauty. And furthermore, he says that the makom atinofos who kir mitzad atzma, there's a fundamental difference between makom tinofos and makom erva. In the case of tinofes, the kir, the disgusting element here, that which is repulsive, is inherent in the tinofes. That itself is inherently kir, it's repulsive. In the case of erva, the erva per se, at least with relationship to the body of the person who has the erva, is there's nothing. It's not an erva. The concept of erva is a relative concept, and it's a reflection of tznius. And that mida of modesty is necessary for the individual to develop his seichel. And therefore the emphasis here is on lo yistakel b'erva. The erva per se is not an erva vis-a-vis the person himself, but rather vis-a-vis others. And that's where you need modesty. So as not to, you know, if there's no modesty, then what you do is you ma'orer, you awaken within man and strengthen within man those powers that are antithetical to his intellectual, ethical nefesh. Alkein b'yisasher yotzar lev ha'adam lohaya ra, lohaya kior b'yosam arumim. When man was created, Adam Arishon, he wasn't created with the yetzar hara, because there was no kior in the fact that they were arumim. Sholi yistakel mitzad ha'makabel, because again, the iser of histaklus and the exposure to erva is mitzad ha'makabel, the one who sees and gazes on the erva, not the person who has the. And since Adam Arishon was not endowed with a yetzahara, there was no sense that erva is an erva. Erva is only an erva relative because of the yetzahara. That's only the influence, the impact of the erva on the makabel. And therefore the fact that man and woman originally were naked, that doesn't mean anything negative, because again there's no concept of erva, because there's no yetzahara to intensify man's koach of taiva gasa, his meshicha to the dark alleyways of hedonistic pleasure. And now we get to number 4, and that's mapolosin shel rishoyim. And here he says in Kuf Lamid that when we see that the Rishoyim in this world reign supreme, they have a free reign in this world, then a person who looks on the surface level, right, he's not the Chacham Amiti, but rather he's full of Chachma Chitzonis on a superficial level, he begins to have like mixed feelings. He doesn't understand where is the justice in the world, where is the compassion of God. However, when his chachma becomes much more profound, then he looks and observes with an eye that goes beyond and below the surface and penetrates into the omek, the depth of Chachma, and he begins to realize that there is a tachlis, is a purpose to the lives of Rishoyim, of the evildoers. And when he looks at the development of history, he realizes in an amazing way that even the very existence of Rishoyim and their evil is all part of a very positive and profound divine plan. And this Chacham Amiti realizes, Yakir, let's see the words here, Ekshesof kol sof hara ha-gadol bi'atzmo yisavev tachlis shel tov v'shlemus. That within the domino theory, you know, the domino effect, cause and effect sequence in the divine plan for mankind over the course of history, even the evil itself plays a role within history to cause and bring us closer to the ultimate purpose of the goodness and the perfection. And that's going to bring the nefesh of the Chacham Amiti to be mispale, is amazed by the ultimate goodness and kindness, the chesed of God, the supreme chesed of God, and the wisdom of God that is hidden below the surface. Now here you have to press the return button. I don't know why it wasn't done so. This is a whole new presentation. He's number five. Number five on the list is the Plia Yoser Gadol, the greatest amazement of it all, the mystery of all mysteries, and that is death. And those who are limited in their intellectual perception, those who would only be a Chacham Bashkofa Shidchis, they are overwhelmed by the thought of death. And it brings them to a state of depression. The day of death, he says, is a day of etzev, of shmamon. Rak acha regesh habo mispailus achushim levadom hu yom amisa. What is great about David HaMelech as the representing the Chacham Amiti is the stakel b'yom amisa v'rom agdola hi achlof, that transition. That wonderful transition that man experiences at death from the physical, limited, material body and existence within the body to chaya ruach, to some life which we don't know of, we have never experienced, but the life of the spirit. From a life that's full of darkness, of confusion, of evil, and to make that transition to a life that's full of light, of goodness, of noam, of feeling a sense of comfortability, all that is the transition between life and death. And David HaMelech recognizes, with his chachma that goes below the surface, this transition from life to death to a greater level of existence. And he sings the song of the Torah's Chesed of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he sings about the greatness. So we see that even in the fifth stage, and maybe even in a certain sense, Dafka in the fifth stage, even beyond the first four, it's David's insightful and sensitive penetration below the surface, that wisdom, that's what brings David to Shira. And now he summarizes. He says, "Bi'olanu otzim mahalach ruach hakodesh al David al v'shalom shirigoshosav shehirgish chesed Hashem umalea sheruso hod v'noam hayutoldo shal chachma muka." He reiterates what he said in his introduction, that all these regoshos, all these emotional appreciation of the compassion of God, that brings David HaMelech to the expression of Shira about the Hod and the Noam. All this is a result of Chachma Amuka, of David's deep perception and wisdom on an intellectual level, HaChoderet El Mistari Ma'alei Hashem, that penetrates into the mysteries of God's creation. V'yechaya hu agever hu kam al b'malos hachachman esyonis ha'shevetz b'omek Mechkara. David HaMelech is capable of using the highest tools and the highest levels of wisdom, whether it be abstract thinking or whether it be empirical evidence. He investigates, and yet at the same time, despite the outstanding intellectual quality and faculty of David HaMelech, im kol zeh ne'im zeiris Yisrael, he has a shtapchus ha-nefesh. It's not a contradiction. He can just overflow from emotions and sing shira that comes from the depth of his feeling and the Hadras Kodesh. That's the greatness of David HaMelech. So these are the five transitional stages in David HaMelech's life, and in each case, with this penetrating wisdom that goes below surface level, he reveals the greatness of God, and appreciating that greatness, sings Shira. Okay, we'll stop here.